when it comes to social media and what I post, I could put out a video, and I'm very aware of the fact that if this video gets 100,000 views, I just put out 100,000 videos, because everyone has their own interpretation of, about what I just said, you know, sometimes, which actually has nothing to do with me.
So today on the show, I have a very, very, very young and exciting doctor, entrepreneur, mother of twins, an exciting wellness advocate, so many things in such a young and really inspiring mind. I've got Dr. Kunda Piri on the show. We're now calling her Dr. Kunda, with 4 degrees at a really young age, giving inspirational, influencing stories on social media, known for her abilities to drive, known for her abilities as a single mom at a really young age, driving wellness, making us feel better, and really with a great story and a long way to go, and really shaping young minds in Zambia, women and men, and really happy and proud to be sitting here next to her. I'm really just glad to meet you, obviously, and welcome to Nkwazi. So I was really excited to, first of all, just learn about such a young person having so many degrees. At this age, you're going to tell me what that age is, I hope. How did you do that? How did this happen? And what is that about?
Well, I mean, thank you very much. Yeah. And I'm very honored to be here.
Yeah.
So my degrees, it's not something that happened overnight, obviously. It's, I think, over a decade of studying extensively to get those 4. So yeah, it's been a lot of hard work going into it, and I'm just glad to be able to share my story. Yeah.
So how did you plan to have all those degrees? Did you plan to be a doctor? Did take me from the beginning.
So I didn't start out aiming to get 4 degrees,
right?
4 degrees before I turned 30, which is quite a lot.
It's a lot.
But so it was, you know, step by step, and it kind of just happened that I ended up getting that many. But it's been a journey of purpose, if nothing else. So first deciding to become a doctor, I had a Christian upbringing. So I've just always felt the need to have my career, what I spend my life doing, tied to a greater purpose. And as a Christian girl, in my mind, that looked like helping people. And I said, what is the best way to help people? Become a doctor. Yeah, and I was always very ambitious. And my father was the first in his family to go to the University of Zambia, which was a very big honor. So I wanted to follow in those footsteps. And he had told me that the hardest thing you could do at UNSA is become a doctor. And I said, that's what I'm going to do.
The hardest thing.
So it was a mix of ambition and really just wanting to be tied to something greater, to feel like sort of like I'm giving back. I don't know, in some way, I've always just felt that need. And that's sort of how it happened. So I got my first degree. At UNSA, you get 2 degrees for medicine. So I got my Bachelor of Science in Human Biology, and I got my Bachelor of Medicine and Bachelor of Surgery. So that makes me a medical doctor.
And how do they happen, one after the other, or what does that look like?
So the first one, you get the first one when you graduate after 4 years. Uh-huh. That I got that in 2016. That was my first degree. And then after 7th year, you get your second one, which was 2019. Then I got my master's degree in public health.
Right.
Yeah. So once you're a doctor, you're a general practitioner, but then I wanted to specialize in something. And after working, I went to Chinsali. That was my first job, which was a bit of I don't say culture shock, because it's still Zambia, but I was living Lusaka, you know, and going to Chinsali. It's a bit rural.
Yeah.
And it was my first job, you know, right out of med school. But it helped me take on a lot of responsibility. And I spent my junior residency there just over 1.5 years. And then after that, I went to Mpika, Michael Chilufya Sata Hospital, where I did my senior residency for a few months. So within this time and being in the rural setting, I took on more responsibility, I think, than I normally would as a young doctor. And so I felt like I don't say reached a ceiling sort of growth-wise, and I thought I wanted to sort of branch out. I didn't see myself long-term in the clinical space, so I decided to do my master's degree in public health while I was working. So that became degree number three. Yeah, and then a couple of years after that, 2022, I decided to do an MBA, because then I'm thinking I want to take this into, you know, entrepreneurship and see how I can, you know, sort of make wellness into a business, which is essentially what I've done.
So which part of being a health practitioner, a doctor, which part really took your passion? Which, what did you like about it? Or do you like about it?
About being a doctor. Yeah. So first, I'm assuming you mean in the clinical space.
Yes, because yes.
What I do now is exactly. Yeah. It's exciting, first of all. Yeah. It is exciting. There's a rush that comes with it, you know. And it, not to be overly dramatic, but I think we all go to, well, I definitely went to medical school for the that moment when you have this emergency, you know, and someone is coming to you, doctor, can you help? You know, and there's an adrenaline rush that comes with it. It's a lot of responsibility, of course. So I think I did love the excitement of it. And I like the fact that it helped me to grow as well on a personal level. I definitely did not see myself taking on as much responsibility as I did, especially so early.
Yes.
So I love that part of it. And then just the people aspect, you know, connecting with someone, speaking to a patient. I think out of everything, that moment when you're really just connecting with someone is the magic, I think, of medicine for me.
I like that word, the magic. So I've also read about the cesareans. Over 100, you've performed over 100.
You've read everything.
You've led over 100 cesareans. I mean, that's a really key moment. Look, every part of medical is so key, but that's key.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that, because that was something I did in Chinsali and in Pika, junior senior residency. So, you know, the number of doctors that side, or at least when I was there, that's about 4 years ago, there isn't that many, at least not as many as here. And they're serving a large community. Mm-hmm. So you have like Chinsali town itself, but then you have the districts around.
Right.
Many of them which don't even have hospitals. They just have like rural health posts.
Yeah.
So you're having patients coming to Chinsali district and now general hospital from all over. And they're traveling very far distances sometimes. And when you're talking about cesarean sections, that's an emergency intervention. You know, so the help must be done immediately.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time when you're the young doctor on call, you don't have the chance to start calling your boss, who is, you know, probably the only consultant in the district, you know. So we had to learn to do a lot of things as young doctors. And one of them was that life-saving intervention, yeah, because you are saving two lives.
Exactly.
Yeah, so during the time I was there, I got the chance to do over 100, which I'm pretty proud of. Yeah.
So is that number normal, or I mean, maybe we just don't hear about it. So would 100 over 4 years be pretty normal in an area, or were there just a lot of cesareans?
So that's 100 in about a year and a half.
Gosh.
That's me.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them, because it's every night, you know, every day rather, you know, you're receiving referrals from the whole district, as I said. So yeah, and like I said, it's life saving. So in a lot of those situations, you don't have time to think of any other, you know, like any other intervention. So yeah, there's a lot of cesarean sections happening.
And then the magical moment, I'm sure, when you've delivered a baby and the mother, maybe there are a few special ones, or, well, they're all special, but what does that feel like?
It's that first cry, you know, I think for, as the surgeon, you know, as the doctor who's there and the whole team, really, we just want to hear that first cry.
Yeah.
And the moment you hear that, then you've done a great job. Yeah.
Have you had any babies named after you?
No, not yet.
Maybe you don't know.
Maybe I don't know. Yeah. But I've had some really good stories. I think one of my fondest memories was a woman who came from really far away, you know, and she came, I think, by motorbike at some point. And you can imagine she's a pregnant woman in labor. And she didn't know she was having twins because where she was, she couldn't do a scan. Like, they don't even have, you know, the means to do things like that. So it was finding out in the operating room that she's having twins, and, you know, we're surprised, she's surprised, everyone's happy. It's a special moment.
I was going to take you there, actually. I was going to ask if you have delivered cesarean twins. Obviously, you have. That must be really special. Tell me about your twins.
My twins, huh? Yeah.
Girls?
Girls, yes. I have 8-year-old now, 8-year-old identical twin girls.
Oh, yeah. Stunning.
Yeah. Chiko and Mutinta. They are more famous than me.
So 8 identical. So how do you, as a mother, you obviously know the difference. Mm-hmm. So how do they differentiate themselves when they are not with you or when they're at school?
Yeah.
Is it hair style? What is it? How do they differentiate?
Well, Tinta is slightly taller. So twin two, she's 2 minutes younger. She's slightly taller. So that's usually how people can tell. But facial features, they are quite exact, to be honest. Even like, when they're turned around, even I struggle. Yeah.
And then what's their characteristics? Like, how do they differ?
Personality-wise, they're both quite extroverted. Okay. I like to think they're kind of like me split in two. So you have Tinta, who's a bit of the nerd. So she likes to read more and she likes school more. And then you have Chipo, who's also very smart, but she's more creative. So she likes to make things. Yeah. So it's nurturing those two different personalities. It's quite interesting.
And then how did you decide their names?
Well, we were looking at traditional names at the time. And they are Tonga girls on their father's side. So Chipo and Mutinta, it just made sense, I think. And it sounds good, I think. So I think it was meant to be.
So tell me about, I've read a little bit about when you had them and how that, because you had them whilst you were studying.
Mm-hmm.
So when you found out, how did you go about that? Surprise, what am I going to do? Am I going to go continue my studies? Do I have to stop? Do I have to get married?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, I was 22 at the time. Mm. I was in fifth year of medical school. So definitely not the plan, and definitely not what I, at the time ideally should have happened. So there was a lot going on, you know, emotion-wise. It was having to deal with some level of disappointment in myself, and then dealing with other people's disappointment in me as well, you know, which was not easy. But I just knew that I was going to get through it, you know, somehow. And it's very difficult to explain what was happening in my mind at the time. It's only sort of in retrospect, you know, when you look back and you thought, wow, how was I so confident that everything would work out? Because at the time there was no reason, you know, to actually believe that it will. But it did. And I'm glad. I think I get a lot of strength from my Christian faith. And I think a lot of it at that time was very instrumental for me. Just, I had to believe in things I could not see, you know, and just believing that it will be okay, even though a lot of things weren't really making sense at the time. But I did, with the help of my family,
yes,
of course.
I was going to ask, yeah.
So get through med school and yeah, here we are.
So did you have to stop studying or you continued and it happened all at the same time and all your parents or family came through? How do they come through?
So
what does that look like?
I continued studying and I was very lucky. I had my own room, which is not a common thing to have at UNSA, you
yes.
know.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was at Ridgeway campus and now in fifth year medical school, I had my own room so I could stay there and I had my babies during the break between fifth and sixth year. So I was very fortunate because school was off at the time and I had a C-section delivery. So I needed the time to recover. And I took a few weeks off. My lecturers were very understanding. Yeah. And family, of course, was very helpful as well at the time. I think, yeah, that's how it happened. It was a step at a time, really.
Do you remember the name of your cesarean doctor?
No, I don't. No, I don't remember. But I do remember the whole experience. I remember the first cries and
UTH?
They were born. No, in Chingola. So
okay.
I was born in Chingola. Yeah, home is in Chingola. So it was in Changa South, Mine Hospital, the Mine Hospital there. And the surgeons were really good. Mm. They made me feel very comfortable. The twins were born 2 minutes apart. And I remember both cries. And they were held next to each other. They were held up to me next to each other, which is one of the most beautiful memories, yeah, I think, of my life. And I think in that moment is when I realized they were identical because they looked exactly the
even
same.
Even
at birth, they looked exactly the same.
Gosh.
Yeah. Because, you know, with my obstetrician,
yes,
they were in the same, they were in separate sacs. They were in separate sacs, but they had one placenta.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was always a question, are they identical? Are they not? Because sometimes two placentas fuse in, and then they look like it's one. So we were not sure, but I really wanted them to be identical. So when they were born and held up to me, I was like, yes.
That's great. I actually wouldn't imagine that even at birth, you can see that they're identical, but obviously.
Yeah, no, you can.
Yeah.
You absolutely can.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, how sweet. And I know that you're active on social media, mm-hmm, and people have poked at you for how you bring up your children and being a single mom. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
You know, I just try my best to share my story as authentically as possible. Mm-hmm. I do not pretend to know everything. You know, I'm not saying I'm the ideal human. And I do actually speak about a lot of the things, like the fact that I'm a single mom, and I do desire to be with, you know, in a marriage one day and things like that. And bringing out that it's like it's a bit vulnerable, and you know, people will always have things to say about that, but it's the truth. Like, it's the reality of my life. I don't think it's fair for me to just talk about the accolades, you know, to say, oh, I have all these degrees, and then, you know, but people can see I'm with my children, but how come you're a single mom? I think it's only fair that, you know, I should say, hey, this is what my life looks like, but this is what I want.
So now tell me about growing up in Chingola, because I want to know about that. So mm-hmm, tell me about growing up. Were you only child, first child, in the middle, siblings? I want to know everything.
Mm. I was born in 1994. You did ask about my age. I'm 31. I just turned 31 last month. I was born in Chingola. It's a small mining town. Yeah. I like it. It was pretty nice. My father worked in the mines, and then my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I'm the second of four. Mm-hmm. Although my youngest sister is much younger, so I was the middle child. Well, still kind of second or fourth, oldest girl. So I think I've taken on a lot of those traits that are stereotypical of the oldest daughter, in terms of being very independent and, yeah, things like that. Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not sure. I was a very, I think, introverted child. I didn't have many friends, not in a sad way, but I read a lot. I like to read. One of the funniest memories from my childhood, because I had, we had the mine library. It was very close to home. It was like a 5-minute walk, and I would sneak away to go all the time. I used to go so much that at some point my mom didn't believe I was actually going to the library. She said, there's no way a child voluntarily reads that much.
What were you reading?
Books, storybooks. So there was this this series of, I think they're called, is it Ghostbusters? Is it
Ghostbusters? Yes, yes, yes.
The books.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, and I read all of them, you know, and I read bigger novels. I read textbooks because I wanted to be the smartest kid in class as well. And luckily I was. So, yeah, I was that kind of child.
So did your friends think you were nerdy at school? Were you like coming top all the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Of course, they did think that.
But you didn't. And you were just like, you were just doing.
I was just doing what I enjoyed. Yeah. I knew it was fun. I thought learning was so much fun. And then when I got the knack of it, I realized being number one is fun as well. You know, it's nice to beat everyone in class.
And this is like from primary, obviously, through to secondary. And you were just like hitting the numbers.
Yes, I've done pretty well in school always, I think. Yeah. And that's just because of my love of reading.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tell me, I want to know a little bit more about your siblings.
So I have an older brother who's 4 years older than me. and he's married to children. And then there's
soccer
me.
Based?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's me, and I have two younger sisters. One is 5 years younger than me, and then the youngest is 14 years younger than me. Yeah. She's at Fatima Girls, actually. That's similar to Ibenga.
That's another one where they just really produce some awesome people.
Yeah.
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 And then, of course, the journey, like you've said, to decide to be a doctor was through your father.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what are your parents like, even today? What do they say to you?
My parents are very proud, of course, of how far I've gone, especially in my academics and being a mom. Of course, you know, a lot happens in family dynamics, and I'm also just at a place in my life where I'm figuring out a lot of that.
I like the fact that you're doing this at your own pace, which I think you should be doing. And it's really incredible, to be honest, like what you've achieved in a short space, or at least by the age of 31. Mm. Tell me how you now navigated your way from clinical to now into wellness. And also, I need to know about the, need to come to you actually about the whole weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand you were much bigger than you are now.
Yeah.
What happened? How did that happen? Were you always big? Then you, did that make you navigate into the wellness arena? I want to hear that.
Okay. So from clinical medicine to wellness. So first it turned into public health, because from PICA, when I, senior residency in PICA, I decided to join Global Health Corps. So I took up a fellowship with Global Health Corps. It's a US-based organization, and they run a fellowship. They were doing a fellowship program with like four African countries, Zambia being one of them. And the program is run in such a way that they place you at a public health institution in Zambia. So I was working at a statutory body, health research related. Yeah, so that was my first sort of break into public health. So I left my clinical job, and I took up the fellowship opportunity, and that was 13 months long. And that was a very eye-opening opportunity, because it exposed me, of course, it's this international fellowship, and I'm interacting with all kinds of people, and they have this leadership training. And I think it really set me up for a lot of the things that I did after.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for 13 months. And then after that, I took a year kind of break, because at the time I was finishing off my my first master's degree, and I had just begun my first. So I was doing two programs, sort of, they kind of overlapped. Mm. So I was a bit overwhelmed. So I needed just a break after the fellowship ended. And I also used that time to grow my platform. So that was like 2023, when I began to really seriously post on social media, because I thought I want to share a bit more about my life, and I want to see how growing my personal brand as well will help with the career aspirations that I have. And so 2024, that was after a year. So I had finished at this point my first master's degree. So 3 degrees now in the bag.
That's just now.
It's 2 years ago. Okay. Yeah. So now I had, that was my third degree. And then I took a job with a health scheme administration company. So it was a wellness, I was health and wellness manager. So that was my first like corporate job,
mm-hmm.
In the wellness space. And at the time I had already begun my business as a weight loss coach, because I had undergone my weight loss transformation. I lost over 20 kilos.
I need to see pictures of you. Will you show me after this?
Yeah, sure. And they're all over my social media. I share them all the time. Yeah, so I lost the 20 kilos and I began.
For what weight? So you were?
I was about 80s, to 60s.
Were you like family natural big, or you were eating badly, or how were you?
Mm-hmm. I think it was.
Oh, that weight rather.
Yeah, I think it was, well, I wouldn't really say eating badly. It's just not being deliberate about how I'm eating and not moving as much, because during the time when I was making all these career changes, it was very demanding on my body. You know, the exercise was slacking, and I was I sound like I'm making excuses, but yeah, a lot was going on with me. And so it was just, I realigned, you know, set my priorities clearly and decided to just start doing it the right way, the exercise and the diet. And I lost the 20 kilos over about a year. Yeah. So I then began coaching people, showing people how to do that, and turned it into a business, which is what I do now. Yeah.
So people come to you to get guidance, mm-hmm. to manage or lose their weight, mm-hmm. how do you maintain yours first? Like, what do you do?
It's a combination of a lot of things. Mm. So it's lifestyle, really. So one of the things, and it's the small things, I always track my steps. You know, I make sure I'm moving my body constantly. I have my step goal. So no matter how tired I am today, I will get to my step goal by the end of the day.
And what's your step goal?
10,000.
But I read something that said that is total rubbish. The 10,000 is not the goal. I guess it needs to be depending on who you are and your body size, but they're like, don't be aiming for 10,000. You can do the same with 6,000. But there's all the stuff going on social media, mm-hmm. which is so confusing around mm-hmm. weight loss and that sort of thing. But it must be individually based, right? That's not like for everybody.
Yeah, it is individually based. And then, you know, it's a lifestyle thing as well. For me, it's gotten to the point where I have to move my body or I physically feel ill, you know? So, and I think the way life has evolved, we live very sedentary lifestyles, you know, and such that you have to be deliberate about actually moving, because it's very easy to drive everywhere and get a ride everywhere and essentially just never move. And if you're doing less than 3,000 steps a day, that's a sedentary lifestyle, you know, which is unhealthy. And that's actually very easy to do less than 3,000.
It's sitting at your desk.
Yes, it's very easy. So you have to be extremely deliberate about moving more. I mean, I can't speak to that research about the... But I'd say, yeah, if you can keep
it's social gossip.
Yeah, if you can keep it 8 to 10, and there's a lot of misconception when it comes to exercise. People tend to think you need... It's not about intensity, especially when you're looking at long-term health. You know, you're better off doing steady, low-impact, steady-state cardio like walking than, you know, lifting really heavy weights in the gym for an hour. Yeah. You know, you do that for an hour and you think you're an active person, but you're sitting the rest of the 23. Yeah. So, you know, who's more active, the person lifting heavy weights for an hour or someone walking 10K steps a day?
So do you combine that with, do you combine it with gymming at all? Or you're just mainly trying to just walk and do, what other deliberate things are you doing?
So for me at the moment, I really don't put too much pressure on myself, and I'm very deliberate about making it sustainable.
Yes.
Yeah. Because this is what I do every day. You know, it's not like, oh, I walk 10K steps every other day. No, it's my life. So I do whatever I can do that day. Sometimes it's, I don't go to the gym. I don't have a gym subscription at this time, but I have some equipment at home, you know, so sometimes it's a bit of that for 10 minutes and the walk and watching what I eat. And that, yeah, I think that does it.
Did you run ABSA?
No, I didn't. I should have, though. I will next year.
Right now, your main focus is obviously on your wellness business. Mm-hmm. And what else are you doing?
So there's this as well, you know, growing my personal brand.
Which is great.
Yeah, which, because I do use my platforms to advocate for the wellness as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it's essentially doing the same thing. Yeah, and then there's also creating the lifestyle and family content with my daughters. Yeah, and I also, I'm deliberate about mentoring, because I get a lot of people, younger people coming to me and wanting to know about my journey. How did you do this? How did you do that? So I do have a mentorship organization as well, specifically for career development.
Obviously, you're doing this. There's the Leadership as well, mm-hmm. Academy. I want to know about that.
Yeah, so the Leadership Academy, it's just my way of sort of giving back with, you know, I do have all of these qualifications, and I know people have questions about it and how can I do the same, and people aspire to do that. And so that's just a platform where I share that knowledge, about career, whether it's career coaching advice, especially for medical doctors, because things are looking a bit different now for medical doctors. Employment is not guaranteed.
No.
And I advocate for using your education to find real life solutions.
And find the real you, maybe.
Yeah, to find the real you.
Which you have.
Yeah, and also real life solutions to the problems that real problems that people are having, you know, and can you translate your education into a service or a product that helps someone and will sustain you, you know, outside of employment, which is what I've done and is what I teach other young professionals to do as well. Yeah.
And what are you telling young people now? I mean, what's your main message in that when you speak to them, you know, encouraging them? What are you saying to them?
Work hard, you know, work
doesn't
hard.
Doesn't come easy, right?
Yeah, no, it doesn't come easy. Work hard and don't buy into the instant gratification, because that's, it's a thing now. Everyone wants things to come so fast. You know, I get a lot of stuff on my social media when I talk about my degrees, because I do talk about them quite a lot. And a lot of the things people say, you know, in the negative about education. And I realized that it's because a lot of people think, oh, you go to school, you get your degree, and then that guarantees you a job. You know, it's almost like it's this attitude of someone owes you something, you know, like, oh, I have this education, someone should give me a job, you know. And so people want things to come like that, but it doesn't work like that. Yeah. It takes time to build a career, you know, just because even if you do get the degree and the master's degree, it doesn't mean you land your dream job the next week. It takes time.
No, I'm still really fascinated about your life. You, as in Dr. Kunda, or maybe Kunda, and what your daily life looks like, what it looks like with the girls, and how you manage to, let me maybe ask the question like this. How do you balance your now career and being a mom? What does that look like every day? What's the most important thing? That's a lot of questions, but what's the most important thing to have a balanced day?
Yeah, I'd say the most important thing is priorities. So my life is ruled by priorities. Literally in every minute, I'll ask myself, what is the most important thing right now? You know, and that's what I do first. And that helps me, keeps me from being overwhelmed, because sometimes when I ask myself this question, the answer is just eat something. You know, really, because the answer is just eat something or, you know, take a nap, you know. And it's about defining those priorities literally minute by minute, because if I take everything at the same time, it's just too much.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
I think people forget that. And the world is so overwhelming right now. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good one, actually. It's just like, what's, in fact, what are your three most important things today?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you just can't manage.
Yeah.
And you have sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you also, is that how you also manage your wellness and your being, your Kunda?
Mm-hmm.
Is that by daily, minute by minute, this is what I need to do? Because there must be so much.
Yeah.
Is that how you do it?
A good to-do list. You know, I start my day with a really good to-do list.
Or the night before or in the morning?
Either. Okay. But before I do anything, really, I need to know what am I doing today? What's the most important thing to do today? And it sounds like a small thing to do, but it's so important.
Yeah.
So I think keeping my priorities straight and making, you know, making time to just enjoy the moments, even with my kids. I don't, because, you know, when you think about it, being a single mom and running a business and doing all of these things by myself, it's a lot. But I try to focus on the fun, you know, just...
What are the sort of things you do for fun with them?
Making our videos is really fun. And I think that's why we really stuck to it so much. The girls love it. They enjoy it. We like to bake. We like to cook together. They'll be right there, mommy's little helpers. And we like to go out. They love to go to a good play park, you know, which is also a good time for me to kind of let them roam. And I sit somewhere and watch. You know, it's little things like that.
Are they good travelers? Are you a good traveler?
I'm a good traveler. They are not.
Oh.
No, they're...
Why?
They get very restless. You know, they're still 8, so they're really impatient still.
But when they're together, at least it's probably easier, right?
It is a bit easier, but then sometimes, you know, because they gang up against me, then it's just, you know, two against mommy, then...
What would the gang up be? Like, what sort of thing?
Well, if they want to do, you know, a certain type of activity and they'll insist on that. And they're very strong-willed girls. They have a lot of opinions. But I do see a lot of myself in them. So I think I do let them get away with quite a lot.
So sweet. So what do you, what do they do? Like, you know, if there's holidays and that sort of thing, how do you plan that with them?
Mm-hmm.
How do you ensure that, you know, you're both bonded and it's creative and they're productive as well? How do you sit and plan with them? Like, guys, we're on holiday, mm-hmm. this is what we're going
to
do.
I try to do, you know, an activity every week, at least something that will take us out of the house because they have a lot of energy. And I do, I mean, they don't work out like I do. So I like for them to have very active playtime. I like them to not spend so much time seated watching TV and move their bodies. You know, it's good exercise for them as well. So yeah, it's just about being deliberate with the planning. So I know the kind of things they like to do and I just see what's feasible, of course, without bending too much to their will, because I don't want them to be too spoiled. And especially I'm very cautious about that with the fact that I'm an only parent. I'm the only parent. So they have to, you know, I kind of have to be strict. I have to have that balance. Yeah, we can't be best friends all the time.
Do you think they see the fact, do you think they're conscious that it's only mom winners, they've got friends who have got mom and dad, or do they just see you as, do they see the big family and not just like moms alone, but they see the mom, dad, granddad, mm-hmm. uncles. Do they see the big family?
They do.
Rather than it's just mom.
No, they see the big family. And, you know, with kids, it does take a village.
Yes.
So I try my best to keep them in touch with the rest of the family as well. A lot of the time it is just us because, I mean, they have school during the week. So weekends, kind of just want to spend time with them. But whenever we have time to meet with family, we do that.
And what do you say to them? Or let me ask this differently. Mm-hmm. How do you think they see you?
Well,
do they see you as like a powerhouse? Do they see you as, I want to be like her? And you know, they're sharp, huh? From what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
They're a bit like, how do you think they're seeing you? Because you would have seen that in your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think for the girls, mommy is really a role model.
Yeah.
They want to be just like mommy. And I think most kids are that way with their parents. And with them, I also see them wanting to take after my work because now their games are, I'm making a meal plan. I'm typing, I'm doing my work, I'm sending this meal plan, you know, to my, and I think it's so cute. Oh, I want to be a doctor too. No, I want to be a doctor and a teacher. And when you look at it, that's kind of what mommy does. So I love that for them. I do try to show them as well that mommy is not the whole world, you know, and mommy's not perfect either. Yeah, just to strike that balance because I do want them to be realistic about things, but we're very close.
So do you think like at school, people are looking into their lunchboxes to like, your mom's like a help. this shouldn't be in there.
Oh, I hope not.
Are they conscious?
They are. And I try, you know, we do our best with the healthy eating, of course, but they are kids. So sometimes I will let them eat what they want to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think that when you look back, how many do you look back and say, you're satisfied with the number of people you've helped on a, because when we look at your the weight loss mm-hmm. program, it's not just a program, but it's actually about helping souls and people who have really struggled with this.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to say, look, I get satisfied when somebody has actually said to me, I've lost that weight, or I now feel better, or I'm now on a really good meal plan.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about helping people get to where they want to get?
Yeah, I'm really passionate about that.
Mm.
Of course, I understand the struggle on a very deep level because I've undergone it myself.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so and also, you know, I feel like there's a gap in this area because a lot of the time the nutrition and counseling at the hospital, it may not be, you know, as effective. If you are struggling with your weight and you go to the hospital, a lot of the time you'll be told, oh, you exercise for 30 minutes and you eat better. And it's very generic advice, which is why I felt the need to come into this space, you know, to actually tell people the exact things they should do, you know, which have worked for me and have worked for hundreds of other people. And the fact that I'm serving people, not just in Zambia, but my practice is online, so I'm able to connect with people even internationally. and see that it's working everywhere, you know. So it makes me trust in these interventions more. And for me, the joy of it really is when someone says, you know, I didn't need to starve myself to lose weight. You know, it's undoing all of these misconceptions that people have. They think it has to be, you know, it's terrible, miserable existence while you are losing weight, but it doesn't have to be. It's just about eating normal food in a healthy way. And that moment when a client really realizes that they're seeing the proof of it, I think that's the satisfaction for me.
So part of what you do, to be honest, must have a lot of psychological understanding. Because, you know, a lot of what you're saying, a lot of what you do comes with understanding the psyche behind where someone's come from and where they want to go. So, you know, I don't know how you would say that your personal psychology has also transitioned over the years from who you were physically. I don't know how you position your psychology actually as a person. Would you be able to sort of picture that? Like, this is how I've changed how I think.
And that's interesting that you should say that, because a really big part of my program is mindset. It's specifically about mindset, you know, when it comes to weight loss, because that's the first thing that needs to change. And one of the things I teach clients is to get rid of the all or nothing mindset. And you find that these are things that it doesn't just apply with weight loss. And which is why I say when you lose weight, you change every area of your life. Everything changes. It's not just the weight. You know, the weight is not the problem. It's a symptom of the problem, you know. And then the mindset shifts is what changes the problem, you know, on the deep level. And then now the manifestation of that is you losing weight.
Right.
So things like the all or nothing mindset, you know, when it comes to weight loss, it manifests as, if I don't have an hour to work out, then I'm not working out today, you know, because I don't have an hour.
So how's that changed you as a person?
Yeah.
How's that changed where you were, how many years ago?
We can say three
years ago. How's it changed you, and how's that impacted on how you behave with people, behave with your children, behave with your family?
Losing the weight.
Yeah.
First of all, the confidence, of course, and it's not just confidence in, oh, I look better now, or I think I look better now, but it's in, I accomplished this thing, which is difficult to achieve, losing 20 kgs, you know. It proves to myself, it's physical evidence to myself that I'm capable of accomplishing difficult things, you know. And it's it always is, you know, the way it is with confidence is you always were capable, but you didn't know you were until you had physical evidence of it, you know. And that's the role that weight loss has played in my life, is me seeing myself achieve this great thing and saying, you know what, I can do difficult things. So if I can do that, I can grow my business. You know, I can leave this toxic relationship and I can stand on my own, you know, and in all areas of my life.
Do people treat you differently
after losing weight? That's a good question. I don't think so. I think maybe it's my perception of how they're treating me, not necessarily that the way they're treating me has changed.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's the way I feel about it. Because of the way I feel about myself now.
Yeah. And what about your girls? Do they now, how do they relate to that? Do they see the difference? Or, I mean, they're 8. So yeah. Maybe it's just mom.
They do see the difference. And, you know, I was vegetarian for a year. That was 2024. Yeah. I was vegetarian. And I recently started eating meat a few months ago. And they were telling me, mommy, don't get fat again. Because they were worried. They were like, wait. Was the weight loss because of the being vegetarian? I was like, no, that's not why I lost weight. You know, that was just a lifestyle choice at the time. So they have seen the value of what you eat and your body size. But I try to not let that manifest in a toxic way because they're little girls. You know, I tell them, no, being big or being small, it's not that when you're big, you're not beautiful. You're still beautiful. You know, it's about your health.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to maintain a healthy body weight for the sake of your health.
So how did you move out of your, what made you decide, like, I don't need to be vegetarian anymore?
I think I just felt called to have a bit more fun in my life, just to allow.
What does fun look like other than food? What does fun like look look like for you? What does fun like look for a 31-year-old? I want to know.
Well, I don't know about for a 31-year-old, but for me, fun looks like just peace of mind. Mm. You know, fun looks like not overthinking everything. Fun looks like being in the moment and just being wherever I am, sometimes eating whatever I'm eating without thinking about it too much.
So when you make your videos, is this in the moment? Like, that looks like a good story, like looks like a good post.
Yeah.
You don't overthink it.
A lot of them are actually very spontaneous.
Yeah.
It's very much in the moment. And I think that keeps the authenticity of it. Mm. And I think I'm also very deliberate about, I want my platform to be what I created it to be. I don't want to censor myself. You know, I don't want to not say what I really want to say. So it's fun.
So I'm going to ask around how you feel about the pokes on social media about you being a single mom. Mm. You've said to me that it's not actually an issue. Mm. The fact that you're also taking things a day at a time. Mm-hmm. It's not an issue, and you're happy. Mm-hmm. You're doing the best you can for your kids. But how do you see that? Do you think it has an effect on your children in their future that they grow up with a single mother?
Okay. Well, first the social media commentary. you know, I'm really aware of the fact that there's a lot of projection that goes on as well. You know, some people say we could be sitting in, I think quantum physicists say this, we could be sitting in this room, but we're actually not sitting in the same room based on our different perspectives of this room, our different perceptions of this room, you know, which is informed by our experiences, you know. So to me, this, I could be in a room with a few people, but to you, maybe this room is really crowded. Oh my gosh, I'm so uncomfortable. And I'm not aware of that. So to you, it's a completely different room, you see. So even when it comes to social media and what I post, I could put out a video, and I'm very aware of the fact that if this video gets 100,000 views, I just put out 100,000 videos, because everyone has their own interpretation about what I just said, you know, sometimes, which actually has nothing to do with me. And so for me, I've just, you know, I'm really aware of the fact that I can't internalize everybody's opinion, yeah, you know, and still stay true to the message that I'm trying to communicate. So it's really just appreciating it, I guess, for the role that it plays, and also understanding the fact that we live in a world of duality. So if there's light, there must be darkness, right? So if you are someone, there's up, there's down, and all of that. So if you're someone who's going to have a lot, or you have a cause that has a lot of support, you are also going to have a lot of, yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of naysayers.
Yeah.
And so when you realize that the naysayers are just playing the role that they're meant to play, you see it as support in the end, you know. And so that's what it is for me, really. It's just accepting everyone for the role that they're playing in the ecosystem. And when you see it that way, there's really nothing to be upset about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, if you decide to take this role and this route, that's how you have to take it. Otherwise, you know, it's almost pointless.
Yeah.
And you can't, again, you cannot take everything to heart. Mm-hmm. You are doing the right thing when you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed, on your day, your chores as a parent. You're doing the right thing for yourself and for your children. And mm-hmm. I think that's really what matters.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I would not want to be an influencer, to be honest with you. I don't think I'd be able to manage all the auntie, what are they calling them? All the aunties and uncle comments that people make. And people have got so much time.
They do. And you know, when it comes to the kids, because you did ask about the effect that it has on them.
Yeah.
I've actually seen the opposite. You know, my kids are growing up to be very confident. Mm. They're good public speakers at their age. You know, they were invited to a book launch a few months ago where they actually spoke. You know, they are confident enough to stand up. And that's not something that every 8-year-old can do. You know, so, and they're seeing mommy also doing it. And the fact that we've, you know, our personal brand, and I have this online business, and the fact that, you know, my brand also supports that.
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, it's a win-win, really. So, yeah.
Who do you follow on social media? Who's your go-to person?
Who do I follow? so I try to not consume a lot of social media. just because when I started out with, I decided to actually be a content creator, I found that consuming a lot of content, it sort of, I don't say diminished my creativity,
right,
but subconsciously, or is it unconsciously, I start sort of copying what other people, without really
picking up.
Yeah, you pick up, and I learn very fast. Yeah, in that regard. So I try to not consume too much.
So it helps it fresh,
me. Authentic. It helps me keep it very original. Yeah, I think that's really helped me. But I do, I'm a big fan of Dambisa Moyo, the economist. Yeah, yeah. I'm a very big fan. I think I really aspire
Dame. To be, Dame Dambisa.
A baroness.
Baroness.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really admire her. And I look up to a lot of other women, obviously, in our space who are doing similar things. Yeah.
So I think when we have Baroness Dambisa, we need to call you through.
Yes.
Have you met
her?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Oh.
I haven't.
Okay. Nkwazi? Next mission.
Oh gosh, that would be a dream come true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then outside of our Zambian space, who are you looking, who do you follow? Who are you aspiring to? Who inspires you?
Well, I do look at the likes of Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey. Mm. Yeah. I'm still very much on that train. So I do look up to them, read their books. Of course, yeah, I'm a big fan.
And what's on your bedside right now?
Right now, I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird. So I've gone back to the classics, because I do feel like, well, because they're not part of Zambian literature when you're in school.
Yeah,
but it is international. Like people read that in school, and I feel like we miss a lot of references sometimes. You know, people are talking about these books that everyone's read. So I try to read those as well.
What's your book gonna look like?
My book. So I do have a book. Yeah. I have a recipe book, which obviously my wellness work. But then I'm going to write many more books, and including an autobiography, which is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I'm manifesting this.
So they're talking about autobiographies. I listen to a lot of radio.
Mm.
So they're talking about autobiographies the other day, and the fact that how autobiographies can, you know, you're telling your own story. So people have had all these misconceptions over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, your autobiography is the one thing where you have the chance to tell it as it is. And somebody can't answer back to you.
That's true.
Whilst they're reading the book, they can't comment on it because, like, it's telling.
I like that.
Yeah.
I've never thought of it that way.
They can't answer back because you're saying this is it. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
All yeah. Right. Thanks. Tell me, what in life, when you wake up, what scares you? Like when you wake up or when you're going to bed, like what scares you? What are you so thankful for, actually? Two questions.
What scares me is unfulfilled potential. That's my biggest scare. You know, I'm really deathly terrified of that. Of the thought that maybe I won't
achieve.
Yeah, like what if I leave some stones unturned? Mm. And am I really maximizing every single opportunity I get? Am I really applying myself where I am? And I was thinking about this actually. One of the comments I get a lot when I do talk about my education is, you know, people are worried about I could never fund for degrees. How could I get funding for a fourth degree? You know, but then my question is always, are you passing in your first one? Like, are you actually, like, how are your grades right now? You know, because how are you failing in your diploma and saying, oh, I could never get a fourth degree because I don't have the funding? You're not even using the opportunity you have now.
One, right.
You know, so I'm always about maximizing every single opportunity I get. So I'm constantly looking around myself, you know, looking for, is there something that I'm not seeing right now? Because I think the key to getting to the next level is here. Like, it can only be here. Where else would it be, right? You can't be there before you're here first. So whatever you need to get there must be here. And if you're not fully, and I'm glad you said gratitude, you know, appreciating where you are, you could never see the opportunity. You know, so obviously really deliberate about staying grateful, but also just really being present, you know, and identifying everything. Am I using all my abilities? Yeah, and not doing that, I'm terrified of that.
So tell me now where we've kind of gotten to this, we've gotten to this point. Mm-hmm. You're doing fabulous things. An influencer, really, quite amazing. Mm-hmm. How do you see, only very young, how do you see the next couple of years going for you?
Wow.
What do you want? I'm not going to ask about the whole marriage because like we've all said everybody at some point, you know, you want to try it, you want to be there.
Yeah.
But how do you see the next couple of years?
I'm really excited about the next couple of years because I feel like I'm in a space where I have deliberately created a life that I am genuinely excited to wake up to, you know, and I love where it's going. I can't wait to see. And it's about the impact for me, really. I just want more coaching, you know, more people having life-changing transformations and more mentorship and growing our platforms to millions. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Great to have met you. You've inspired my day. And I hope we've made your morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Chana. This has been an absolutely stimulating conversation. I've had a lovely time. And I hope you have me again.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.